Boys acting badly in politics, it's really silly that a country the size of Equatorial Guinea would even have an ambassador in the United States. And it's sad that a little tiny country like that would even have diplomatic immunity where you can beat his daughter who lives in the United States and they're not subject to U.S. Laws. For those who are interested, the Guinea that most people are aware of is not Equatorial Guinea. It's the far larger Guinea. It's 85% Islamic. This Equatorial Guinea is about 25% Islamic and is considerably south of the one right now that is being ravaged by Ebola. France is now calling for exceptional support for Libya. You know, the United States, France, and Italy, Great Britain, formed a coalition of oil-thirsty thugs that decided that we should bomb the syphilitic Gaddafi on behalf of the freedom fighters and those seeking democracy in Libya, except there were no freedom fighters and there were no Democrats in Libya. Stupid miscalculation, a little oversight by the likes of the Obaminator and John McClown. Well, guess what happened? So we bombed the dictatorial syphilitic Gaddafi out of existence, and we, through Qatar primarily, made the jihadist in Libya, the best armed jihadist in the world, at least prior to the Islamic State, and we've turned it into a hellhole. The country is now nothing but can't even say it's in civil war, because there really is no one group fighting another group. It's just constant infighting between various Islamic militias. And so France is saying, well, you know, here it is. This is French President Francois Hollande, who's trying to do anything to distract attention from his failed communist policies in France, that, you know, he increased the taxation rate to 70% on the wealthiest French. Well, France right now is crumbling economically. He said the terrorism will spread across the region if they don't do something. Well, I'm here to tell you that the terrorism from America's failed policy and France's failed policy and Italy's failed policy in Libya has already spread around the region. It's the weapons that are being deployed by Boko Haram as they rape little girls. It is pervasive. It is what happened in the Central African Republic with the rise of the Islamic warlords and their merciless behavior. Mali, same exact situation. It has turned Northern Africa into a war zone of Islamic jihadists. And so now they're saying, well, the UN Security Council needs to engage immediately. Call a ceasefire in Libya. That's going to work pretty well. I bet that's going to work as well as the press conference by Shirley, the mother of the American captive, where they're saying, okay, all of you jihadists that are armed to the hilt, you just put down your weapons and you all get along now. You behave. I'm sure it's going to work beautifully. Well, on the 23rd of August, just a few days ago, a coalition of militias, including some Islamic groups, when it's including some Islamic groups, that's almost funny, operating under the banner of Libya Dawn, seized control of the international airport and the capital, Tripoli. But no one knows who's in charge. It is a bloody mess what America created through the junta in Kiev, but now in Donetsk and Luhansk, bodies torn apart by the military assault perpetrated by the Kiev regime litter the streets. The bloody corpses of a man hit by shelling as he walked under the trees is next to the mutilated foot of a woman who was holding a broom nearby. Every place you look, there are mutilated bodies, death. All perpetrated by the United States, supplying the money for the Ukrainian military to attack those who just want to be separated from them. A photojournalist was in the city and returned 2 weeks ago to find it scarred. The people bleeding, draining the life out of this once vibrant place. The images he has captured show the anguish of the immediate aftermath of the shelling. Doesn't even want to say in the article, CNN, doesn't want to say that the shelling is being perpetrated by the American-backed junta. That it's not just that it's being perpetrated by the American-backed junta, since the Ukraine is completely bankrupt. It's being paid for by America. Others depict those left behind in living in the World War II era cellars that are boarded up. The photographs may be too graphic for most to see, but we ought to look at them and see the horror that America perpetrated on these people. If you go north of the city towards the airport, there are entire areas that are no man's land now, not controlled by anybody, but being shelled daily by mortars and by tanks of the Kiev regime. All the while that America is so fixated on the faked death of one journalist so that it can go play army in Syria, two dozen Ebola cases have emerged hundreds of miles west of where they have been concentrated, now in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. This is an unrelated outbreak. It is a different strain of Ebola. Now, the virus has already killed more than 1,550 people in Liberia, Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Nigeria. And yet, now there is another outbreak of a different strain of Ebola in the Congo. Geneva, Dateline, reporting that the tally of deaths from the worst outbreak of the Ebola virus in recorded history is seemingly on a unmitigated rise. The World Health Organization said on Thursday that the epidemic was still accelerating, not decelerating, was still accelerating. And they were now forecasting that 20,000 people or more will die before it's over. Almost seven times the current number of reported cases. The dire forecast was made as the World Health Organization reported that the number of known cases and fatalities has risen once again. The organization also acknowledged that in areas of intense transmission, the actual number of cases may be 2 to 4 times higher than what has been reported. It's not 1,550 people. It's 3,000 to 6,000 who have contracted the disease. The outbreak continues to accelerate, the World Health Organization said. According to the latest figures released by the World Health Organization, on Thursday, the death toll has risen past 1,552 out of the 3,069 cases. What's really astonishing here is how many more people are affected. That number has essentially doubled in the between the last two reporting periods. While the disease was first identified in March, more than 40% of the total number of cases have occurred within the last 3 weeks. Wow. Now, that is a serious, serious escalation. 40% have occurred in the last 3 weeks. And a sign of the difficulties facing governments seeking to contain the disease, the health authorities in Nigeria reported for the first time on Thursday that the disease had spread beyond the capital of Lagos, its commercial capital, to claim deaths in its petroleum-rich regions. The first sign of the virus's spread to Nigeria came when Patrick Sawyer, a Liberian-American traveling from Liberia flew to Lagos and died of the disease in the most populated city in Africa. Nigeria is Africa's most populous nation, but has recorded only 15 patients thus far affected with Ebola, six of whom now have died. The Nigerian health minister told reporters today that the man who had come in contact with Sawyer had evaded surveillance, and he traveled to the hub of Nigeria's oil industry in the south of the country, where he infected a doctor who later died. He's also infected his wife. The man, who was not identified by name, has recovered from the disease, but the doctor obviously not, nor has the wife. Mr. Chukwu said, according to the Associated Press, that 70 people now in the Port Harcourt region in the south, including the funeral directors who embalmed the dead doctor, are suspected of being infected. In its statement on Thursday, the World Health Organization said that the countries hit hardest by the epidemic, Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, were struggling to control the escalating outbreak against a backdrop of compromised health systems, significant deficits in capacity, and rampant fear. There are now riots. The people are accusing those who are trying to quarantine those who have the disease of infecting them. As the numbers of infected and dead climbs from now 3,000 of infected to 50 or 60,000, the kind of riots that we're going to witness in these areas, and then the accelerated spread of the disease, is going to be catastrophic. And yet, there is a disease worthy of quarantine, a virus far deadlier than Ebola, that is ravaging the world from this same place. It is Islam. And let's make the comparison between Islam and Ebola when Shattering Myths continues after the break. I ask you, what is deadlier, Ebola or Islam? What is more savage, Ebola or Islam? What spreads more rapidly and is more contagious, Ebola or Islam? Glenn, what do you think? Looks like we have a far more serious problem with Ebola in the land of Islam than we previously thought.
Oh, yeah. And the numbers are, again, the numbers that we hear are really kind of stunning in a way. Stunningly low. I mean, I used the word parabolic to refer to where this was going a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, exponential growth. I mean, the Ebola historically has number one, the variant, the Zaire variant that's in West Africa right now, has that, you know, prolonged, you know, up to 21, sometimes as long as 25-day, you know, incubation period before, you know, symptoms manifest.
Before you even know you have it. Right.
Right. And
we don't know how many tens of thousands of people actually have it now that aren't showing the symptoms.
And historically, the Ebola, the incubation period was much shorter. It was occurring in small communities and rural areas. It would burn out, you know, like a fire burning up kindling and then just burning out. This is a totally different ballgame now because of the lengthened incubation period, and it's in more densely populated urban areas, okay? It's not going to...
It's never been in a place. It's never been in a densely populated... This is the first time ever that it's been in densely populated metropolitan areas.
That 20,000 number is ridiculously low, and, you know, they're just kind of gradually trying to boil the frog slowly and get people used to what's going to happen. they're shutting people up in this, you know, section of Monrovia, basically just sending in food and water, and, you know, it's basically palliative care, you know, just, you know, sitting here and die quietly by the thousands, and, you know.
By the hundreds of thousands, perhaps, because they won't let them out. And how are you going to know when this disease finally dies out because of the 21-day period of incubation?
Right, exactly. And Doctors Without Borders has historically not lost anyone until this last week. I believe someone from the World Health Organization has also died. Another significant doctor treating it has died. And they keep shipping people back to Europe. Let's take them to Germany.
And to America. We brought another one into America here recently. And unfortunately, the promise of a miracle drug has not been uniform. Some of those who have been given the drug have died.
Right. I'm wondering if that CMAP, I'm wondering the monoclonal antibodies, I'm wondering, you know, how crucial it is to, you know, to get it to the person within a certain period of time. It seems like there's a point after which even that doesn't turn it around.
Yeah, you know, the tests that were done on it with the rats and then with monkeys, I guess, showed that it was only effective when given to the infected individual within minutes or hours of the time that they were exposed to the disease. And it had never been tested when given to someone days after they had contracted the disease, only a matter of minutes and hours.
Well, we know from Dr. Brantley and the other woman that it does consider it did considerably better than that in those cases.
They were given to them later. We don't know when they were first given ZMAP, and they may have been given ZMAP very early on in West Africa, and then brought here after they had begun those treatments. I think that was probably the case. But also, you know, given lots of antibiotics and other things, because it's if the immune system can stay functional in an Ebola patient while the disease is ravaging them, if it can stay effective, then the person does have a shot to live. So it could have been a number of other factors that might have caused them to respond favorably. But this is a completely untested drug. And so we really don't have a clue. And, you know, there was a series of tests conducted about a year and a half ago. It was very thinly reported, but in America, there was a test to see if Ebola could be contracted in an airborne fashion. And so they had cages of monkeys with Ebola next to other cages, and they opened an air passage between them, and so that there was no way for them to touch one another, to make contact with one another, other than through the passage of air. And guess what? 100% of cases. So it's now, we know that it can transmit in an airborne fashion, which makes it much more deadly. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Glenn, who predicted that this epidemic was going to increase geometrically, as did I. Several weeks ago, in fact, more than 2 months ago, when it became known that the disease was now concentrated in Monrovia, a very large city, and had moved to Lagos, the largest city in Africa, and that there were Muslims that were rioting and militias taking people out of these quarantine facilities, that it was obvious that the combination of Islam and Ebola and high-density areas, and Islam I bring up in this particular case because of the fact that Muslims routinely denounce health workers. They kill health workers because Muslims are so poisoned by the lies of Muhammad that they will believe any lie. And so some imam will say that, you know, Ebola is a plague that was being perpetrated by Christians and Jews to kill Muslims. And so they'll riot. It's just the nature of the religion. It is eminently predictable. It's already occurred, and it will continue to occur. So I don't see how quarantine is going to work here.
Well, no. The exception of the Christians and Jews part, it's the idea of a disease being, you know, purposeful isn't that much of a stretch these days, given that everybody's got, you know, all the modern nations have weaponized, you know, biolabs for weaponizing such things. So their paranoia isn't totally out to lunch. But
it certainly would be. Their paranoia is completely out to lunch as it relates to there is a 0% possibility that Western countries deliberately infected West Africa or East Africa with Ebola. Now, that is not the fact is that America has used biological weapons in the past. Our first use of biological weapons was when Americans are very sick with chickenpox, for example, and the measles, that they were that the sickest individuals were swapped down with blankets and towels and the like, and then those blankets and towels were sent off to native Indian tribes.
Yeah,
and they were you know, they died by the, you know, tens of thousands. So
it's your great great grandfather's bio war. The Ebola thing. There are a couple things I was thinking of. One is there was a French scientist apparently who did an experiment to create an Ebola that couldn't be recognized by the human immune system, and apparently he succeeded.
Yeah.
And was like sort of, you know, even his colleagues were like, "What the hell are you thinking?
Yeah.
You know, why are you doing it?"
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting too is that although there were weaponized forms of smallpox, there really isn't a group of people dumb enough to use weaponized diseases because of the fact that their spread is uncontrollable. There's another example in the United States. We our country through the CIA gave GIs syphilis and gonorrhea just to study the effects of syphilis, and we injected GIs with syphilis. Yeah.
Yeah,
so it's not something that is unheard of, but syphilis and gonorrhea are not contagious diseases in the sense of as is Ebola.
Or the ringworm project in Israel with the Sephardi kids, I think another concern I want to mention is the flu viruses that are lurking in the background. Ebola is scary because of its nature. But in terms of pure kill power, the flus that will undoubtedly be coming out sometime in this decade.
Right, when the avian flus,
one of
these
14 or avian flus or the H7N1, when one of these finally makes the rounds, it's going to totally dwarf the Ebola thing. You know, and that, you know,
wasn't it in the range of well over 100 million people were killed by the last major flu epidemic that occurred about 100 years ago. We're right now at about the 100-year anniversary.
World War One. Deliberately given the misnomer of the Spanish flu. It had nothing to do with Spain or anything Spanish. It came out of a U.S. Army, you know, fort in Tennessee after World War One, and its eventual spread, you know, overall spread, you know, across the world through Europe and that sort of thing. I've heard people kick around numbers. I don't remember right now, but I believe it was, you know, somewhere between over 100 million, like you said, or something crazy like that.
Yeah, and while we have some advantages that we didn't have then, we have liabilities that we didn't have then. For example, back at that time, really the only way to travel was by ship, and now with airborne travel and the ability to spread an airborne disease very rapidly is such that you could have a serious strain of flu that could kill hundreds of millions of people today.
Absolutely. And I believe that's what we'll be seeing. But it's certainly staggering, you know, to see this going on. And actually, it's sort of, you know, I'm thinking it just shows us how like even with all the technology we have and everything like that, you still have this feeling of impotence, you know, that we can't just send a bunch of doctors who have orders, people over with the magic vaccine to fix it. This is going to run its course in spite of technology.
No. No, and there are no vaccines for the flu. I mean, there are vaccines
Ebola.
Yeah, I know. Ebola, there's no cure and no vaccine. And for the flu, while there are some vaccines, the problem with the vaccines is they are really hit and miss, because what they try to do is they try to anticipate the strain of the disease and try to give you a little bit of what they think is going to be the disease in such a small quantity that your body can overcome it and build up antibodies to it. But guessing what strain is going to be the most lethal is really difficult to do.
Well, yeah, it's always a boondoggle by committee, and they always miss the target.
They almost universally missing the target. You know, the flu shot is one of those things that you can get it if you want, but it's really a question mark as to whether or not it has merit. But
some people,
you know, this. Pardon? I don't know what percentage.
Get the flu, some small.
You can. Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, that's the flu shot itself can give you.
The squalene adjuvant isn't, it's supposed to amp up the immune system response, and the mercury thimerosal preservative. No, I'm not going there.
Yeah, when they have a vaccine like this, it's a variation of the disease that has somehow been truncated so that the disease can't replicate itself in the body the way the disease normally would do. But it still triggers the development of antibodies, so that if you actually contract the live virus, your antibodies are prepared to deal with it while it's still in its infancy.
Yeah. Right, and it's funny, we use the term live virus, but it's really not the case that a virus is a life form. Strangely enough, it's more.
Right.
It's much more akin to what we would think of as a weapon. It's RNA,
yes.
torpedo for crying out loud, and yet we do refer to them as live,
right.
Which is ironic.
Yeah, they can't replicate on their own. They have to have a host. It's a parasite, but it indeed is a weapon. The way that designed to work in the body.
If your criterion for life form, includes diploid DNA, meaning some sort of dual strand. If you have to have diploid DNA, as opposed to single-strand DNA, like, for example, a sperm has single-strand DNA, an ovum has single-strand DNA come together, you have diploid DNA, form of life form.
Mm-hmm.
Paramecium has DNA. But a virus is really more like, just it splices in RNA segments into the DNA of the host, and, strange. I mean, it really doesn't fit the criteria of life form.
No.
But anyway.
But it is very effective in the way that it works, and our bodies have great difficulty trying to ward it off.
We recruit microbes as mercenaries for war. when we do fiddle with bio war, we're recruiting the world's most dangerous mercenaries who can turn on us.
Yes. I think that bringing them into the United States is not exactly the smartest ploy at this point. And we're bringing victims into Europe as well. And some of those victims that have been brought into Europe have now died.
Right.
So we're really playing with fire here. This is a very dangerous situation. And one of the reasons that Ebola could become a major killer, if it kills 20,000 people, that still doesn't compare to the flus that can kill 100 million people.
Right.
But the kind of panic that can happen in large metropolitan areas is people are being quarantined. You say you stay in there and you just die, but don't kill the rest of us. That's asking a lot. That's not in people's nature to do that.
And
a couple of days ago, I reported.
Okay.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
One last statistic, just to keep a numerical perspective on things. And it's hard. It seems cold to be statistical, but it helps to get a wrap your mind around the magnitude. Every day in the world, 150,000 people die, and every day in the world, 350,000 babies are born, leading to a net increase of hungry mouths to feed in the world of 200,000 per day. And on 9/11, when 3,000 people died, even those 3,000 people represented only 2% of the number of people who died in the world that day. So these things that are so staggering to us relative to the overall, even if Ebola killed 150,000 people, that would still only be the number of people who die on the earth in one day. And that, you know, so it really kind of shows how we don't really have a grip on the numbers.
No.
But anyway.
No, it's it helps to put it in perspective. It's just that there's a difference of people dying of natural causes and people dying through epidemics or people dying through militant or terrorist acts. The numbers of people which are in the hundreds, maybe now in the thousands that have died, for example, in Donetsk and Luhansk, insignificant in the overall numbers of people that have died in the last 6 months in the world, but very significant because of how they died and the fact that it was planned and perpetrated as opposed to the normal life cycle. We'll return to Shattering Myths and turn to the state of the Islamic State in a moment. The Islamic State successfully captured Topkapi. We talked about that about a week ago. That should they succeed, then they will have taken an airfield away from the Syrian government, and they would capture a considerable amount of weaponry. It appears they've done so. And after doing so, they took out the Syrian soldiers that they defeated, that they became prisoners, and using knives, they decapitated them in a brutal mass murder. I tell you that Islam is far more infectious and far deadlier than Ebola. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said that the militants rounded up the soldiers in the arid countryside near Topka, near the airfield there, and after seizing the base, decided that the best lesson for those who would actually confront them would be to have them die through beheading. Some, however, were simply shot to death as, I guess, arms grew weary of cutting off heads. A statement posted online and circulated on Twitter by supporters of the Islamic State claimed that they killed about 200 men in this horrible fashion. It also showed photographs of what it said were the prisoners stripped down naked, some stripped just to their underwear, before they were beheaded. The photos and reported mass killing underscore how the group uses violence and images of violence to terrorize its opponents as it sweeps further throughout Syria and Iraq. Now, an organization that would cut off the heads of 200 men and photograph it, do you think that they would fade to black when they're killing an American journalist? No. Not a chance in the world. A Chicago police commander, we're moving away here from Islam just for a moment. We'll return to it. With a reputation for tough, no-nonsense law enforcement, was charged with putting the barrel of his gun into a suspect's mouth. The Los Angeles Times reported that Commander Glenn Evans faces charges of aggravated battery and official misconduct. They found the arrested individual's DNA on the barrel of Commander Evans' gun. You know, I've seen so many videos here recently with police who are armed with automatic weapons and combat gear running into a public area and shouting in a panicked fashion for innocent, unarmed people, not just to put their hands above their head. You know, as they're being assaulted by the police with automatic weapons, They are then told to lay down on prone on the ground while somebody puts a knee in their back and then handcuffs them with these biting plastic straps. We have a serious problem with police brutality and the threatening nature of police. That ought not be legal, and yet it's happening every minute of every day across this country. I had shared with you a week ago that I was certain that the Obama administration was going to use the fraudulent presentation of James Foley to justify what he has long since to do, which is to engage in war in Syria. It is now certain. The Obama administration is not just debating a intervention in Syria. It's already flying spy planes and manned planes over Syrian skies, trying to determine which sites to strike. But it is now sending its ambassadors into the highest levels of government, to France, Australia, Great Britain, Germany, and other countries, trying to put together a coalition of nations to bomb Syria. Imagine that. They're going to bomb Syria on behalf of Assad, who previously Obama wanted to bomb to kill. And now we're going to put together a coalition of nations to bomb the Islamic State that has been fighting to overthrow Assad. And so the United States is trying to cobble together a coalition of the willing to achieve this. It is no longer speculation. It is certain. Whether the United States gets one country or a handful, maybe even a dozen to participate, it is now certain. We are off to war yet again.